Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is January 13th, 2021. The first matter on our calendar for oral argument is the case of Brian Madison versus Todd County et al. Although we are convening by Zoom hearing, the rules of oral argument remain the same. Each side has 15 minutes for oral argument. I understand that the respondents have agreed to split time with, I believe, Ms. Olson, taking the first 8 minutes, and Ms. Shelberg Nelson the remaining 7 minutes. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It is important that you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Zora Sub-Laterman. I represent Mr. Madison in this case. Mr. Madison was the plaintiff in the district court. All of his claims were dismissed on summary judgment, and he's the appellant before this court. We have kind of a lot of moving parts in this case. We have two sets of defendants and kind of a variety of claims and then a punitive damages motion. So I'll try to go through things that I think are most pertinent, but if the court feels that I'm off topic, if you want to hear about something else, I hope you let me know.
So Mr. Laterman, with that invitation, I am going to actually ask you to focus our attention initially on what are the exact defamatory statements that are, or the allegedly defamatory statements before us. First of all, do you agree that we look at the allegations of the complaint to identify the alleged defamatory statements?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the court should look to the complaint to see what was alleged in terms of what the statements were, yes.
Okay, so as I look at the complaint, which was never amended, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so as I read the complaint, I come upon, it seems to be maybe four or five statements. The first being the reference to your client being chief internship with the Motley Police Department, correct?
Yes.
The second being the reference to your client improperly handing off criminal cases within the city to the county. Would that be the second defamatory statement?
Yes.
Then the statement about your client being on the clock with the city of Motley at the time he was interviewing with Morrison County?
Yes.
And then there's also an allegation, the complaint about him speeding while on the job for the city of Motley, but I don't see that in your brief. Is that an argument you are no longer, or a statement you're no longer identifying as defamation?
That's correct.
Okay. And then finally, the references about your client not being a good fit for law enforcement, those were not argued in the, those were not advanced in the complaint, correct?
Your Honor, I know that we argued that those were defamatory. I believe that I agree that they were not identified in the complaint. This was kind of a strange case where we had a background investigation performed, and in order for me to plaintiff to kind of determine whether Todd County and Deputy Dirkus had a basis to make those statements, it was necessary to at least conduct some discovery, because if somebody told him that and he reported that in his report, then it's not defamatory. If he just kind of fabricated, then it is defamatory. So in terms of discovery, this issue of the statement that he made that Mr. Madison was not a good fit for law enforcement, that came up as another defamatory statement based on discovery we conducted. I don't believe that was identified in the complaint, but that was developed in discovery. And we also have the statement about Mr. Madison allegedly literally degrading people during an interview in Morrison County. Once again, once we did all the depositions, it became apparent that that was also a statement that Deputy Dirkus was never given by anyone during the investigations for claiming that was also defamatory. But I believe that was also not identified in the complaint.
And then my final question is, did I miss in the complaint any purported defamatory statements, or did I cover them all?
I believe you covered them all, Your Honor. Okay, so I want to talk about initially the Morrison County claims, and those are kind of the simpler claims in this case. So we have Sheriff Larson, and Morrison County, and we have two statements that are attributed to Sheriff Larson. We have the on the clock statement that he told Deputy Durkas that Mr. Madison was on the clock during the interview in Morrison County. And then we have the second statement, a set of statements about inability to follow through with cases and handing off cases at moment's notice. These are the two statements that are that pertain to Morrison County. What the court should look at here is, I think initially, what the district court did with these claims in terms of how they were resolved. Morrison County never made any sort of a qualified privilege argument or defense on summary judgment.
Although Mr. Lederman, that was alleged in their answer. I mean, it was raised as an affirmative defense.
Yes, absolutely. It was raised as an affirmative defense, but plaintiff had no notice that that was an issue. That was an issue for summary judgment. Morrison County never raised it, and the district court didn't either. Even at the hearing, if the district court was considering dismissing Morrison County based on qualified privilege, the district court should have at least given an opportunity.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm getting a lot of feedback. I just have one more question. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Is there a principled basis for treating the Morrison County people who were contacted with respect to the employment background check differently than the Todd County people involved in the background check in terms of the operation of the conditional privilege?
Your Honor, did you say the operation of the conditional privilege? The reason to treat them differently is that Morrison County never made that argument at the district court. Morrison County made a totally different argument. They raised three different defenses, basically, that they claimed that the statement about passing off cases was an opinion. They argued that the on-the-clock statement was subject to this public concern defense pursuant to the Mathner case. And they argued that there was no damage to reputation. And so this issue of qualified privilege, which requires a finding of probable cause and not a finding of malice, this was never briefed by anyone even or discussed at any length before the district court with respect to Morrison County. The one argument they did make that I do want to talk about is this public concern defense. So the issue is whether Mr. Madison can seek presumed damages without proof of actual harm. And this is what this Mathner case talks about. And so in order for that defense to be valid, there has to be a statement of public concern. And if it is a statement of public concern, then in order to recover damages, there has to be actual harm to reputation. You can't recover presumed damages in a defamation per se claim. And given the fact that this is what the county argued and this is what the parties briefed, this is also the issue that the court should consider. Rather than trying to figure out whether or not there was qualified privilege, the court should consider the arguments that were made. And the district court didn't really talk about qualified privilege either. It was a one sentence decision that said they're getting qualified privilege and that's all there was to it. So in looking at this defense that the county did actually raise, first of all, the on-the-clock statement was not a matter of public concern. This was a civilian. Mr. Madison was a civilian at the time. He was applying for a job for the county, for a deputy position job. This was a routine background investigation. And on top of that, any sort of data that was recovered from that investigation, it was private. This is not data that the public would have the right to obtain anyway. So this was a matter.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I had a question about kind of stepping back and looking at our the legal principles that are at play here. If somebody is applying to be a police officer or any public position, is there any time when previous job performance would not also be a matter of public concern?
Your Honor, I believe that depends on what public concern is. And in order for something to be a matter of public concern, the matter initially has to be available to the public. This was a private concern matter in the sense that
what's the legal authority that you're relying on to define public concern as meaning information that's available to the public, as opposed to whatever the concern is would be something concerning to the public? Let's say that somebody is late to work all the time and they're applying for a job as a publicly paid employee. The fact that they have a history of being late, wouldn't that be a matter of public concern? In other words, isn't everything in terms of prior job history a matter of public concern? And if you're defining public concern differently, then what's the authority for that?
Your Honor, the authority that I'm using is this Mothner case, or the Mathner, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. And what the court talked about there is that we have to look in for these cases in terms of context, look at the whole thing. The court also talked about that every case is not the same. So we look at the facts of each case. And our position, Your Honor, is that every time somebody applies for a position in law enforcement, the background investigation data doesn't automatically become a matter of public concern, especially given the fact that the public doesn't have the right to obtain any of that data anyway.
So is it the Mathner case that you're saying focuses public concern on information? Or is it, and if so, what is the citation for that? Because I don't see that in Mathner that limits public concern to data or information.
I'm not saying that there's language in that case that says that. I'm just saying that the court talks about looking at the entire context of what was said, when it was said, who said what to whom, and then also the context of what was happening at the time. And our position, Your Honor, is that a civilian applying for a position in law enforcement, everything that happens during a background investigation is not automatically a matter of public concern. In addition to that, we do have clear evidence of harm to reputation. The on-the-clock statement resulted in Deputy Dirkus forming an opinion, which is very clear, that Mr. Madison was an unethical police chief. We have clear harm to reputation. If we just look at Deputy Dirkus' report, what Sheriff Larson told him changed Deputy Dirkus' opinion about Mr. Madison. So we have damage to reputation. And so even if it is a matter of public concern, we do have harm to reputation. And also on top of that, we have the Crow Wing County job where Mr. Madison was disqualified solely based on the information that was obtained from Deputy Dirkus' report. So we have harm to reputation. I will switch gears now. I have a few minutes here to the Todd County claims. And what I want to focus on here, Your Honor, is just this issue of qualified privilege. Todd County did raise the issue. You have to have two things. Number one, it was Todd County's burden to establish that there was probable cause for the false statements that Deputy Dirkus made in his report. And number two, if they established probable cause, it was Mr. Madison's burden then to show evidence of malice. And so on the issue of probable cause, let's take this police chief internship statement, for example. District court in the county argued that this was just kind of a typo. But I would submit to the court that if a person who doesn't know Mr. Madison, if a random person was to take this report, Deputy Dirk's background investigation, and read it, and in one place it says that he was an intern, but then in another place it says that he didn't report any internships, we submit that reasonable person would be confused in the end about whether or not Mr. Madison was a chief, or was he an intern, or was he something else. It was never corrected. It was just left vague. So that's a false statement. It's a complete fabrication that there's just no basis for it. There's no probable cause for that. Then we have the on-the-clock issue where Deputy Dirkus reported that Morrison County investigated whether or not Mr. Madison was on the clock, and that the investigation revealed that he, in fact, was on the clock. Once again, there's no basis whatsoever for how he obtained that information. All of the Morrison County individuals that he identified that could have provided that actually testified that they didn't provide that information to him. So once again, we have the issue of no probable cause for that allegation. And then if you look to the issue of malice, we presented overwhelming evidence of malice in this case. And I'll know that malice is typically not established by the defendant just saying, okay, yes, you know, I did this to you because I wanted to harm you. You look to circumstantial evidence. And so in this case, we have the expert opinions of Chief Gazelka, who opined that this was a reckless and lazy and careless and biased investigation. These are his words. We have Deputy Dirkus violating Todd County policies in the course of this background report and then being disciplined for it. We have the data practices violation where he, in a matter of...
The data practices has nothing to do with the defamation, does it? I mean, whether his disclosure of the report to way after the fact. I am concerned about the issue of malice. And if you've got specific evidence that was admitted, please let me know what that is.
Your Honor, I'm out of time, but I'll have my 5 minutes, so I'll just do that at that point.
All right, thank you. Ms. Olson, I believe you're the first up for respondents.
Yes, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel, may it please the court. My name is Kendra Olson, and I'm here today representing defendants Todd County and Deputy Scott Dirkus as respondents in this matter. The district court correctly granted summary judgment in favor of the defendants for all claims that were brought against them. An appellant is challenging the defamation claim as well as the claims arising under the Minnesota Governmental Data Practices Act. And I'd like to draw this court's attention first to the data practices claim. Appellant bases his data practices claim under two separate events. The first event, in the first part, defendant claims that Todd County violated the MGDPA when, and I'm quoting from appellant's brief at page 17, quote, Todd County took approximately 30 days and more than 10 days to respond to Mr. Madison's data practices request, end quote. It is wholly unclear where this 30 days comes from because appellant's claim, appellant himself alleges that he requested the background investigation in early May of 2017. And then appellant himself also admits that he had a copy of the background investigation on May 15th of 2017. It's just utterly impossible that 30 days passed somewhere in between early May 2017 and May 15th of 2017. So even if that 10 days that appellant cites as being a mandatory deadline for Todd County to respond were the law, which it isn't necessarily, Todd County substantially complied with the data practices request and got Mr. Madison a copy of his background investigation. But what's even more unbelievable about that claim is that even if, let's say for the sake of argument, it were a technical violation of the MGDPA, it's not credible that Mr. Madison would have suffered any emotional damages as a result of the brief delay in receiving his background report.
It seems to me the question of damages is what the district court relied on and said, yes, there are violations or claim violations that would survive summary judgment, but no evidence of damages. What evidence did Mr. Madison produced in the district court of damages flowing from the violation of the Data Practices Act?
The only evidence that I'm aware of is an affidavit that was filed in connection, an affidavit by Mr. Madison himself that was filed in connection with his response to the motion for summary judgment. I'm sorry, I don't have the docket entry for that, but it would be around 35 to 40, somewhere in there.
And why was that affidavit insufficient to defeat summary judgment?
Well, first of all, it's a very self-serving affidavit, but second of all, under Adams versus Harpstead, the appellant needs to allege not only that he has emotional damages, but also that those emotional damages are occurring under circumstances tending to guarantee its genuineness. In this case, I mean, if the circumstance guaranteeing its genuineness is that he suffered emotional harm in the first event anyway by being forced to wait a day or two, it's just simply not credible that that would be a source of emotional distress, waiting one or two more days for a report to get there. And then second, turning to the other alleged the other violation of the Data Practices Act. This is where appellant claims that he suffered emotional harm when Todd County disclosed a copy of his background investigation to Sheriff Larson of Morrison County. Appellant alleges that he suffered extreme emotional distress as a result of his background investigation being sent to Sheriff Larson of Morrison County. But he makes that claim when he himself set up a meeting with Sheriff Larson in order to discuss that background investigation. And then during that meeting with Sheriff Larson offered to show him a copy of the background investigation. So if his allegation is that it was the disclosure by a third party rather than his own disclosure, it's simply not circumstances tending to support the genuineness of an emotional distress claim. And these circumstances are nothing like what was present in Navarre versus South Washington County Schools. In that case, the plaintiff's information was widely disseminated to the parents of students. It was latched onto by the media and was the subject of news stories throughout the area, and that's a much more wide broadcast as well as a more in-depth evaluation. In this case, we have a circumstance that is much more like Adams versus Harpstead. This recent decision shows that it's a minimal disclosure, just like in Adams. It was a disclosure to one person, and it was a disclosure to one person who appellant himself planned to show that report to. Under those circumstances, it's not credible to believe that there would be some kind of emotional harm. I will only briefly touch on the issues of the defamation claims. I believe that much of this has already been fleshed out, but appellant alleged only 5 defamatory statements in his complaint. And of those, several of them were abandoned. And the remaining ones have been addressed in our briefing. First of all, the issue of the internship or police chief internship.
Ms. Olson, before you go on, because I agree this was addressed in the briefing, I'd like you to respond to Mr. Lederman's argument this morning that the conditional privilege does not apply because Deputy Dirkus was not conducting his investigation, did not make his report based on, you know, probable cause. How do you respond to that argument?
I think each of those concerns is addressed in the briefing, but in general, Deputy Dirkus made those statements based on information that he received from third parties. This was not information that was totally fabricated on his part. And if there were inaccuracies identifying the speaker, for example, the sting or the substance of the statement is the same and doesn't change. So it's substantially true nonetheless. For example, there were statements by Sheriff Larson, for example, confirming that that there were tensions between the Morrison County Sheriff's Department and the appellant. And those citations, I can't access them immediately, but they're in the briefing. I'd also just like to note that Mr. Lederman noted that the statement, for example, about police chief internship was never corrected. That's because appellant declined to have the background investigation redone. That was an issue that was briefed more in the summary judgment in the context of the 14th Amendment claim, but that was an option he declined. And so, Your Honor, for all those foregoing reasons and for the reasons in our briefing, Todd County respectfully asks that the trial court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Shelberg-Nelson on behalf of the Morrison County respondents.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. My name is Callie Shelberg-Nelson. I represent the respondents, Morrison County, and Sheriff Sean Larson. May it please the court. Essentially, there are 2 statements that have been identified that concern Morrison County. The first is that appellant improperly handed off cases within the city of Motley to Morrison County for follow-up. And Mr. Appellant's argument, I did hear kind of an additional substance to that statement, talking about the inability to follow through and also the handing off of cases at a moment's notice. Those two statements, the inability to follow through and the handing off at a moment's notice, those weren't identified in the complaint. What was identified in the complaint is that he improperly handed off cases. The district court correctly held that this was an opinion, not verifiably true or false. The statement does not constitute defamation because it is purely opinion and a subjective view. But importantly, in this appeal, appellant appears to argue that nobody from Morrison County actually made the statements about handing off cases. So there can be no defamation action against respondents Morrison County and Sheriff Larson, where appellant does not even believe they made those statements. And I would point you to appellant's brief at pages 10 through 11, and also his reply at page 7. Specifically in the reply at page 7, he says, Deputy Dirkus completely fabricated other false allegations, such as the claim about Mr. Madison's ability to process criminal cases, handing off cases to Morrison County, and degrading people during the interview. And so for those reasons, the district court's decision on that statement should be affirmed. Next, turning to the statement about appellant attending the interview at Morrison County Sheriff's Office while on the clock and being paid by the city of Motley. I think it's really important to consider the context of this statement. So what the three witnesses who testified about making this statement said is that what was really concerning was that he showed up in the uniform. And
That may be, but again, we're looking at the complaint, and the statement identified is that he attended the job interview while on the clock and being paid. Seems to me that is a statement that is either true or it is false and can be verified. Why doesn't that support an actionable defamation claim, at least to get to a jury?
And that's where the district court got it right in terms of dismissing that. It may not have articulated the reasons why it should. And what we presented to the court was that the Mathner case applies. It is a statement of public concern. I disagree that it's somehow related to whether it's public data or not, because if you look at the Hunt versus University.
I get confused by the public nature of the statement, because there's that aspect of the conditional privilege, which apparently you've not asserted, although it was asserted in your answer, and that the notion that you cannot presume damages when the statement is on a public purpose. And that's the second point is the one you advanced in the district court and advanced to our court, is that the statement fails to be actionable defamation, not because it couldn't be proven true or not true, but because there are no damages, actual damages flowing from it. Am I right about that?
That's correct. I mean, I acknowledge that he submitted his timesheets. That was not something that Sheriff Larson looked at. He didn't look into his timesheets. That was not something apparently Deputy Dirkus looked into in verifying that information. And so we agree that, but that is what we argued, is that Mathner applies in this case. It's a statement of public concern. It's talking about how law enforcement is using their uniforms to influence a situation, how public funds are expended. This is not just a case about a civilian applying for a job. What Sheriff Larson was commenting about was when appellant was a police chief. And so he was more than just a civilian. And I want to draw the court's attention to Hunt versus University of Minnesota. It's a case this court decided in 1991. And it talks about qualifications of a public employee are a matter of public interest. And in that case, it was a very similar situation where the employee was a government employee working for the University of Minnesota. She was applying for a job with the legislature, did not list the person as an employment reference, but went to this person and they gave a unflattering review of her, talking about her lack of integrity. And the court decided that given the context of that conversation, it was clear that the person was not giving facts. While it may have been defamatory per se, they were clearly not expressing clear facts. And that's the case we have here. Given the context of what Larson and Dirkus, their conversation, it was clear that he wasn't giving an absolute fact that he was on the clock. He was simply saying it gave that impression that he was on the clock because he was wearing the uniform during the interview. And because it is a matter of public concern, under Mathner, he would also need to prove actual malice, and that hasn't been shown here. Under either the common law standard or the constitutional standard, there's no evidence that Sheriff Larson meant any ill will toward appellant or that he knew that the statement was false in any way. I think appellant has admitted that no one from either the sheriff's office or Morrison County at all ever represented that they actually investigated whether he was on the clock for that interview. And so because of that, Mathner would apply to say that he's not entitled to presumed damages. And given that, he's also unable to show an actual harm to his reputation. Appellant testified that he couldn't identify anyone that has thought less of him because of the statements allegedly made by Sheriff Larson or Morrison County. And with regard to the Crow Wing County background report that was done, there's simply no connection that what was actually stated. The reasons why he wasn't hired there were because of statements made by Morrison County. And so we would ask that the court affirm the dismissal of the defamation claims.
Thank you. Mr. Lederman, you will have the last word.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I'll return to the issue of malice as I had promised. So I'm looking at my affidavit, the affidavit the plaintiff submitted in opposition to the motions for summary judgment. Now, exhibit number 14 is this expert report of Chief Gazelka. This is, not somebody we found from New York or California. This is a person who works as a police chief here in the state of Minnesota up north. He offered an opinion that Deputy Dirk has committed a reckless and biased investigation. That's admissible evidence the jury could use to decide through circumstantial evidence, despite whatever Deputy Dirk wants to offer, that he made these statements with malice. Number two, we have the violation of Todd County policy. This is exhibit number six to our affidavit. The Deputy Dirkus, in the course of conducting this background investigation, violated Todd County's policies, and he was disciplined for it. Once again, this is evidence of malice.
Mr. Lederman, was there any evidence that Mr. Dirkus personally knew your client at the time he was asked to and did conduct this employment background check?
No, Your Honor. There was not.
So no evidence of ill will between these two men because they didn't know.
No, Your Honor, but through circumstantial evidence, we can prove that he had ill will in the course of conducting this investigation. He may have formed ill will when Sheriff Larson told him that he was on the clock when he interviewed. So maybe that's when it happened. We're not sure when it took place, but the bottom line is that we're not required to prove malice at this point. We just have to raise an issue of fact for trial. And the evidence that I'm going through is sufficient to raise that issue for the jury. I mentioned the data practices violation, and I agree that
issue. Before you move on to the data practices issue, can you articulate what evidence there is to show knowledge of false, that the information was false?
Can I show that Deputy Dirkus knew that what he was saying is false?
Right, because that's that's how you show malice, is that he passed along this information that he knew was false and did so with some kind of reckless or malicious motive.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. There are two kinds of malice that are recognized in defamation law. We have what's known as constitutional malice and then common law malice. What Your Honor is referring to is the standard for constitutional malice claims, where if you sue a newspaper, for example, for falsely reporting some kind of a news story, or if you're some kind of a politician and you want to sue somebody for defamation and you're a public official, the standard Your Honor explained is a standard that would apply. In a common law defamation case, the standard is evidence of ill will or evidence of intent to injure the plaintiff. And so that's the focus in this case. And Todd County hasn't argued that the other standard applies.
I think they just did. If I heard the argument from your opposing counsel correctly, I think the argument was under either standard.
Your Honor, I apologize, but from Todd County, I haven't heard that argument that the constitutional malice standard should apply. And if that is the argument they're making, that's just not correct. That standard simply doesn't apply in this case. I want to point the court, moving on to evidence of malice, the issue of fabrication of evidence. We have clear proof, at least enough to raise an issue of fact for trial, that Deputy Dirkus simply fabricated certain things, that he fabricated this allegation that Mr. Madison was an intern, that he fabricated an allegation that Morrison County had investigated whether Mr. Madison was on the clock and confirmed that he was. Fabrication of evidence.
What distinguishes your argument from a conclusion that these are just inaccuracies? I mean, inaccuracies in a report don't make it malicious, do they?
Your Honor, I would say the court should look at the totality of what happened in this case. This wasn't just one minor thing or two. We have an entire report that's filled with various inaccurate, exaggerated, and fabricated statements. If it was just one mishap, then sure, I could go with that. But if we look at the totality of this entire report being false in numerous respects, exaggerated language is another issue that we talk about in our briefing. The totality of the circumstances, Your Honor, is enough for a jury to be able to determine that there was malice in this case. I'm out of time. We'd ask for a remand and for trial, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lederman. Thank you all for your helpful arguments this morning. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. That concludes our first hearing, and we will recess pending the 10:20 oral argument. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.